Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning. Welcome to Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And Chris, it's Monday, so it's time to be joined by the Bible geek, Mark Hart. And he is the vice president of Life Teen, author of four books now, as Ask the Bible Geek 2 is out and ready for you to consume, and we do encourage you to do that indeed. Mark, of course, lives down in Phoenix with his beautiful wife, Mel, and their lovely daughters, Hope and Trinity. When Mark was up here in Omaha a couple of weeks ago, he was a proud papa pulling out the Apple laptop and running us through all kinds of pictures. And what a beautiful family. You're a blessed man.
I am a blessed man. Thank you for saying that.
The day has come where you pull out the Apple laptop to show the pictures. We used to just pull out the wallet, you know, and just kind of show pictures. But
yeah, but think about how many more you can hold on the laptop.
You bet.
I like it.
We love the slideshow.
Really?
2 hours later. Gee, thanks, Mark. Those were great.
Yeah, and here's me in Dakota. Here's when we went to Hawaii, right?
Oh, it was wonderful. I just have to say, Mark, I've been thinking about you in the past week because of through events that hit our nation concerning the Virginia Tech killings, just the onslaught, the assault on just not only the kids, their families, but just on our collective senses on such a senseless act.
Yeah, it was one of those moments that everyone will remember where they were when they turned on the news or they heard the phone ring, or, you know, just absolutely horrific, and really an attack on the entire culture of life that the church is trying to build and that we're trying to live.
Yeah, and the thing that was so hard for me, I guess, maybe as a mom, is that when you look at the shock on the faces of the kids who were in school, you know, yes, they're young adults. They'll always be kids to me, though. I mean, when you're looking at 18 to
right.
21, 22, even 23-year-olds, that's the same look I've seen on kids who have been in car accidents and have lost friends. At a funeral for someone who has lost a parent, the looks on the young kids' faces, they're so devastated because they've never, ever had to encounter anything quite as painful as the loss of someone they know or that they even love.
Right. Well, and honestly, it's one of those things where, you know, I don't think at any age you're never really at a point where you're able to deal with it. But
mm-hmm.
I think, especially when you're dealing with adolescents and young adults, you're talking about an age that does not contemplate or meditate upon their own mortality nearly as much as we do as we get into our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about an entire demographic that really is steeped in that concept of, you know, I'm going to live forever. I feel great. I'm invincible, you know, whereas the rest of us, and you wake up and you start to feel the aches and pains and you start going to the doctor more and, you know, you do start to face your mortality more. So it does even have a greater impact on the youth generations. But that being said, it's also difficult. It's a fine line of attention because our youth generations in junior high, in high school, in college, are so much more exposed to acts of random violence, are so much more desensitized to random violence. I mean, the number one television shows in our country are based on violent crime scenes.
Right.
I mean, all the video games and the different things that, even the music and everything we listen to, is so drastically different than it has been in generations past, where there almost is sort of a desensitization about it. There is sort of a almost a numbness that already exists. I mean, if all you'd have to do is take a walk down the aisle at your local, you know, your local store and see the video games that are the hottest sellers, and most of them are based in these kinds of acts of violence and aggression.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that someone could take a Glock of all things and just with a very blank face just shoot randomly, and yet, you know, we think, how can that happen? But in video games, it happens all the time. I mean, you even have so much now where in the video games, there's a rumble effect. So when you shoot, you actually get the ricochet feeling.
Right.
So, I mean, your entire senses are drawn into, as you said, desensitization.
Absolutely. And so I think keeping that in mind, it is a difficult line we walk, because part of us, you know, there are going to be people that are going to stand up and say, you reap what you sow. And
mm-hmm.
as a culture, we allow this kind of stuff. There's going to be the other side that says, you know, how can you say that? This is just now, and no one's wrong.
Right.
And I think what's really important, especially for parents right now, being several days removed now and that kind of thing, I mean, so much more information has come out, so many more stories, so many more pictures and all that kind of thing. I think it's important for parents to try and really prayerfully discern, where is that line?
Right.
Where is the fine line between talking about it enough and talking about it too much? And where is that fine line, you know, to help our young people, our families, even our some of our older family members, to really be able to deal with and really be able to come to some kind of closure and some grips. And Scripture, I think, as always, Scripture really has a lot of insight into that, and it gives us a lot of direction in that way.
And I think that's the beauty of Scripture, is because I think the human person has been dealing with trying to grapple the ideas of death and death that comes suddenly or the unknown of it ever since time infinitum. I mean, we've always tried to struggle with that, and I think that's what the gift of Scripture is, to help us deal with that.
Absolutely, because Scripture is timeless, and it's designed to help us in every stage of the grieving process. And as no doubt anyone who has been struggling with this, I mean, there are a lot of counselors that would be happy to talk people through this stuff. And even in the brief amount of counseling training that I've received, you know, one of the first things you always learn is there is no perfect timetable. Mm-hmm. That you can't just institute and say, well, it's been a week and our mourning is over. Well, it's been a month and our mourning is over. And people process things differently. And these kinds of events, they are so horrific that they can really stir up a lot that someone that maybe has never even gone through anything like this in their own personal life. You know, you never know how images are going to stir in somebody. I mean, I remember after Katrina hit, there were people that were just shocked at things that were coming out of them and things they were trying to process and deal with because of the stark images, because, you know, of that collective human existence of people going through suffering. And a lot of times, you know, God can use even horrific events to really lead us back, you know, closer to Him. You know, a lot of times grace can come through things that are violent and that are difficult. You know, not that that's what God wanted, but that God will even use awful things to lead us closer to Him and healing. And it's not just, these events are not just supposed to move people who are intimately connected to or related to people who are on that campus, that we have a collective human existence. That's what the culture of life is about, mm-hmm. and that we are all in this together. We are all parts of the same body. So if you, I would say this to anybody, if they feel those stirrings inside of them, if they've had a lot of emotion, a lot of just spirituality stirred up inside of them in these times, it's another opportunity to just to pray it through. And and really, that there are some wonderful scriptures they could use. I was scribbling out a few this morning, if you want me to.
Oh, please do.
One of the things I think we need to remember is that God is the creator, and we know that. But God's also the conqueror of death. And I think sometimes we forget that part. We know that He created us and that He's the author of life, but in as a secondary part of that, He also conquered death. He didn't just write life into existence. And it says in Acts 2, you know, God raised Him up and He released Him from death. Because it was, and this was so beautiful, because it's impossible for Him to be held by it. Mm. And if we are created in the image of God, and we're created in the image of Christ, and we're the adopted sons and daughters, you know, that we are the heirs like Christ, that it's impossible for death to hold us if we're justified. It's impossible for death to hold us if we're right with God. Mm-hmm. You know, that God did not only create life, He created the ultimate loophole, you know, out right. of death. Like, He created the ultimate, I mean, that was what He promised us in the garden. He promised us a redeemer. So it's not just bleak. We don't have to live a life filled with fear. We don't have to live a life bound to fear, bound to death, confined by it, shackled to it, that we are a culture of life, you know. And this is really, it's in a weird way, kind of an ironic time, because, you know, right now we're in this season of Easter, and we're reading the Acts of the Apostles.
Mm-hmm.
And the Acts of the Apostles is a very violent book. It's a violent book. It's a bloody book. It's a book that is filled with the struggle of life and death and the threat of life and death, and people who were offering witness to the resurrected Christ, witness to this God who beats death,
mm-hmm.
and they were witnessing, you know, to this God who the truth of this God who beats death while they were being threatened with death themselves. I mean, it really is. It's a whole book about the struggle between earthly life and heavenly life, and the threat of earthly death and the promise of everlasting life. And it's probably the best thing we could be reading right now. The very first chapter of Acts, when they call them witnesses, the word they use in Greek is martyrs, people who are willing to offer their life to ensure that everyone knows that God is life.
Right.
So Acts of the Apostles really coming to me. You know, Romans chapter 8, it's a beautiful, beautiful chapter to constantly remind us that Christ gives us a spirit of freedom, and that if we live in the flesh and in worldly ways only, that's when we should be concerned. But God gives us a spirit of freedom in heaven. You know, that we have to remember that what He said to us in John 8, He said to us directly, that whoever keeps His word will never taste death. Mm-hmm. You know, and really that we need to trust in his promise. He gives us 4,000 promises in Scripture. He promises us in Revelation 21 that he's going to wipe away every tear. You know, he promises us that we have a reward waiting for us at the end of the day, you know, in Daniel. He tells us in 2 Corinthians, you know, that basically we can trust in his promise that he does raise us to new life, you know, and that in 1 John that we have nothing to fear because if we remain in God, we remain, you know, living. You know, and it's in those moments that as we're praying through the Scriptures, you know, that basically we're consistently told throughout the Old and New Testament that our God is a God of life and a God is a God who can beat death. But we're also told even more beautifully throughout the Old Testament to forgive. And I mean, literally, not just when he gives us the Lord's Prayer, but, and there's a reason that the Lord's Prayer mentions forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
you know, asking not only God's forgiveness of us, but our forgiveness of others, just like we talked about, you know, a couple weeks back on Divine Mercy Sunday, that we need to go that mercy first for ourselves. If we can offer it to others, we need to ask God's mercy upon ourselves, you know, in the same way we offer it to others. But he mentions another place. He's, you know, he says Mark 11, you know, when you stand and forgive. You know, basically, when you stood in Scripture, that when you'd stand to call somebody out or challenge somebody, what he's basically saying is don't just stand and challenge people mm-hmm. on their beliefs, on their doctrines, on that kind of thing. If you're not willing to stand and forgive people where they are, then you shouldn't be standing up.
You know, it's interesting that you brought up Acts of the Apostles, because the first and foremost example of that, I think, is the witness of Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, here is somebody who is a senseless act of violence. I mean, all he did was make statements. All he was proclaiming his faith, and they stoned him. And yet, what does he do? He turns to Jesus, and he says, Jesus, forgive them.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, and right there, quoting Christ himself from Luke 23, I mean, Jesus on the cross, Luke 23:34, when he implores his Father to forgive those who are doing this to him, and that's really what this is the paradox of the cross. It doesn't make sense. If people are not ready to forgive the gunman, if people are not ready to forgive, you know, those, you know, those who are involved, if people aren't ready to do that, you know, don't be too hard on yourself. It's okay. I mean, again, grieving takes a while. But we have to understand collectively as Christians that even if we are not personally ready to do that, that is our call.
That's right.
That we cannot, as Christians, go forward. I mean, God is going to lead you to that place where he's going to put that in front of you. God's going to lead you to that place where he's calling you to have mercy. And we have to. We absolutely have to have mercy. We have to push ourselves to get to that point where we're able to offer forgiveness and mercy the same way Christ did on the cross. Because if we don't, then basically what we were saying is that I am not willing to offer that mercy, God, but I do need that mercy from you. And then we're really not living in that image. You know, so again, if someone isn't ready to, that's okay. Everyone's going to be on their different timetable. But the pursuit has to be to be emblematic of Christ, to mirror Christ in all ways. The pursuit has to be, if I'm not willing to forgive right now, Lord, perfect my heart, soften my heart, you know, open my eyes, give me wisdom, give me whatever you want to give me, give me peace, Lord, so that I'm able to get to that place.
And I think the key to Mark and what you're saying is that it is not something that we do on our own. The fact that we turn to Christ and ask for his grace to be able to heal and to be able to do that, you're not expected to do this by yourself.
No, not at all. And it says in Hebrews that Christ is a perfecter of faith. That we should go with confidence and boldness before the throne of God. Who is the perfecter of faith? We have to realize is that it's normal. It's normal to doubt. It's normal to struggle with forgiveness. It doesn't make someone bad to not want to forgive. It makes someone bad not to. You know what I mean? In the grand scheme of things. But again, everyone's going to be on their own timetable. Some people are going to need more time to make sense of certain things. You know, so it's human to doubt. It's human to struggle with forgiveness and these kinds of things. But we have to remember, like it's saying in Acts, like it's saying in Corinthians, like it's saying, you know, in the Gospel of John and the letter to 1 John, we have to remember that we have to seek the heavenly things, not the earthly things. We have to seek at every opportunity to become more in line with the mind and the heart and the love of God, not the mind and heart and lack of love of humanity.
Right. And Mark, I think I want to keep underscoring this because you brought up a very valid point through all of this that probably is that first step, first and foremost, that we should never forget, even when we're wrestling with ourselves, to call on God for forgiveness. Like you said, from the cross, Father, forgive them. That, I think, is such an important first step for everybody to take in this process of healing and trying to understand how to build forgiveness from there.
Absolutely. And you said it really well. I mean, you know, we might never understand. you know, look at all the information that's been gained in 1 week. I mean, remember, like, you're sitting there on Monday and the news is on and nobody had any information. It was taking hours to get any kind of valid information.
Mm-hmm.
All the information that's been gathered just in a few days, and literally years from now, we still might not understand. It's going to be conjecture. It's going to be theories. It's going to be a lot of different reports and you know, varying testimonies and all that kind of stuff. We might never understand this side of heaven, why a lot of things happen and why God allows certain things to happen in his permissive will. But this is not because of God. It's because of sin. It's because of the fall. It's because of humanity. It's not because of God. You know, but mm-hmm. but that what God we always have to trust in is that God's plan, you know, that God's plan will always be for our salvation, and that God will use even sin, and he'll use even awful events and crooked lines that we write because of our sin in our world, that he will use everything and anything that comes, he will use as an opportunity for grace, an opportunity for us to draw closer to him. We just have to find that path prayerfully.
Yeah. And this was a big event in which the nation enters into it. We're all aware of this, but these kind of traumatic events can occur on a smaller scale, but still as traumatic in each person's life, whether it's the death of a loved one, but also just the pains of a betrayal of friendships or the disappointments of dreams not gathered, or somebody who has inflicted pain on us. It can be just as devastating. And at those moments, everything you're saying is true and applicable to that as well.
Well, I tell you, when you see these kinds of things happen, it really is difficult as a parent. I mean, I know that I look at this and I say, well, hearts go out as parents, mm-hmm. you know, especially. All I could think of, you know, watching that was, can you imagine what's going through those parents' hearts who are all trying to call cell phones simultaneously and campus simultaneously?
Mm-hmm.
What an awful period of time that is.
Yeah.
You know, and really, this is in a really weird way. It's a really beautiful opportunity as church to really come together. You know, go to that next step. You know, and I'm hard pressed to think of a parent who wasn't hugging their kids a little closer. You know?
Oh yeah.
And I'm hard pressed to think of you know, what's interesting is that this kind of thing offers perspective to everybody. Like you were saying, Chris. You know, and I look at you go how many stupid fights. And how many unnecessary, you know, conversations or pride, that kind of thing, get in the way? You know, how many parents were sitting there saying, wow, the last time I talked to my son or daughter who's at State University or who's at high school or who's whatever, you know, junior high, whatever, last time I talked to them, you know, the parting words were not kind or were not loving or that sort of thing, you know? And my grandmother used to say something very profound. She used to say, if you want to have the last word in a fight, apologize.
Hmm.
And that really never left me. I'd be wiser if I paid more attention to it. My wife would probably be happier. But it's a reality, you know. And I think that this offers a great wake-up call. I'll start with myself. For anybody who, out of their pride, has allowed relationships to grow cold, to grow numb, to grow absent, to be less loving or less joyful than they could be, anybody that's done that, and this should be a wake-up call to all of us to say, you know what, in the grand scheme of things, it's really not worth it, mm-hmm. that we need to live love first and foremost. So I think everybody just has to take a second, look in the mirror, say, what relationships in my life right now do I need to right? Do I need to rectify? Do I need to change? And we need to go pick up that phone and do it. What are we waiting for, you know?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I want to go call somebody.
Yeah.
Yes. I totally agree with you, because you never know. I mean, this is what's so startling. When things like this happen, whether it is something as dreadful that happened at Virginia Tech, or even just, God forbid, someone you love or care about it is in a car accident.
Yeah, you know not the hour.
Yeah, you know not the hour. So have peace with the fact that there is something beyond all of this, but don't waste time. Isn't that something we do? We waste time.
We really do. It's really... It's funny how quickly we can get caught up in things that are just of the world and things that are just, you know, rooted in worldliness and ultimately death, you know, and we forget about the things that really lead to life.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mark, I think one of the other things too, and we've heard this question asked of us a lot, because obviously people know we're in the Catholic, Christian, religious broadcasting kind of thing, trying to make sense on how they want to grapple with the fact that why does God let things like this happen? And I think most of us can find an instance in our life where we've kind of questioned, maybe felt abandoned. You know, if God really loves me, how could he allow something like this to happen? How do we go about, or can we go about really understanding the will of God?
And I think you bring up a really great point, Bruce, and this is the difference between God's will, his active will, and his permissive will. God does not want, you know, horrible things to happen to people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. But God also gave us free will, and because He loves us, and mm-hmm. because He loves us, because of that free will, that He respects the gift He gave us, and He constantly puts signposts and voices and truth and the sacrament and very, His very self, His very spirit in front of us, around us, within us, to help us choose rightly, to help us choose well, to help us exercise our will for Him and mm-hmm. not for ourselves. That, you know, the Catechism says that pride is the exercise of your will for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that He gives us all these things to conquer sin. I mean, He conquered sin, to combat sin, the sinful nature. But He also loves us enough not to. I mean, if he were to intervene on that grand scale, that would be a violation of our free will mm-hmm. and a violation of the gift that He gave us. You know, so unfortunately, He can't. You know, in giving us that free will, He respects us and He loves us, because you can't have love without free will. That is one of the things that separates us from the animals. You know, like. You, literally, if He forced us to love Him, it wouldn't be free will, and it wouldn't be a gift, it wouldn't be love. And if we did not have that free will, we would be incapable of loving, so we'd be incapable to be in the image of God or to be in the likeness of God. But with that comes a catch-22, is that, you know, that obviously He's not going to control us. So He doesn't want this to happen. He doesn't actively will stuff like this to happen. It's permissive will. He has to allow it. In conjunction with the will that He gave us. However, that being said, everything works for grace, it says in Scripture, and God's grace is sufficient. And He will never let us be tried beyond our control, it tells us in 1 Corinthians, and we should consider every trial a joy, because it's an opportunity to draw closer to Him, which is what it says in James. So we have to be able to look at these and say, it was sin that did this, not God.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And people will say, where was God that day? And the response is, God was right there weeping. God was right there at the very front, weeping and praying and calling out, and weeping and praying and calling out, and not wanting that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think what we have to do, this is a time when these are the kinds of moments that we can't lose sight of the bigger picture. The easy thing to do is to blame God and say, God did this, and that's a natural human response, and it's part of the grieving process, but it's not necessary. And what we have to be willing to do is to pull back and say, how is God working right now? Where is He working? He's working in the parishes out there who are offering support to people who haven't ever darkened the door of a church before. Mm-hmm. He's working through counselors who are trained to help people make sense of this. And he's working in the hearts of the people whose lives will forever be changed. And he's calling them back. Maybe people who it would take, unfortunately, something this devastating to wake them up, He's calling them back. He's calling back those families. You know, like for instance, my family's more blessed, and my children feel more loved because of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Because I saw that, and I hugged my kids tighter, and I held them closer, and because I, in my meager little universe, and my meager little ministry, this absolutely has affected me forever, and it's affected, you know, even in our offices, you know, Life Team, people were buzzing around, running around, pulling together resources and materials to help our parishes, you know, offer prayer nights and vigils and answers and how to minister to young people who are questioning all this stuff, you know, and parents and how to break it open, and we're all running around doing that, and grace comes forth. Is that things like this, unfortunately, and it's sad, it takes things like this to mobilize and have to network people and for people to go seek God more actively and more directly and more intentionally. But that's all grace. That there is a lot of grace that will flow forth from this, and it shouldn't have had to be this way, and it doesn't have to be this way. Sin did this, but God will take even the most horrific sins and turn them into opportunities for everybody in the kingdom. Those close to Him and those far from Him, those who love Him and those who hate Him, turn an opportunity for everybody to experience His love and His forgiveness and His healing.
Yeah, beautifully said.
Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Well, Mark, thank you so much for being with us today. I guess conversation and prayer helps in the aspects of healing. We do certainly want to encourage people to check out lifeteen.com and also check out Mark Hart's books, and particularly a brand new one that he has out called Ask the Bible Geek 2. And again, that's available through Amazon.com. Matter of fact, I think just about anywhere you can find books, you can find that. And it's an excellent resource. We'd like to highly recommend that to everyone. And again, Mark, thank you so much for being with us. God bless you.
God bless you all.